Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I propose a toast to the mitosis with the most. She's a ghost who can boast from coast to coast and every heel I sell. She's more coaches than Chanel, Cartier, or YSL. But she's tired of being quite so huge and dizzy from the centrifuge. She's quick, frozen, colorful. Her prison cell is built to last. Dear Henrietta, did you know your coffin's final nail is thicker than a blue whale? A zillion artifacts grown as long as cell biologists keep peering at your private bit. It's a grand humiliation, showing now across the nation, mutation on a huge scale, bigger than a blue whale, bigger than a blue whale. Dear Henry Lack, did you know that bit you left behind may help to cure its own kind? So many saintly acts may claim a little perch in every church for contributions to research. It's a grand humiliation, showing now across the nation, mutation on a huge scale, bigger than a blue whale, bigger than a blue whale. Well, back in 1953, the lady had a malady, a cervix abnormality that led to her fatality. A Dublin for a biopsy that showed up in malignancy, but also a propensity to fly so rapidly that the scientists went on to see what other uses there could be for her expensive qualities. They shed around extensively to every good laboratory. Her fame was spreading globally, so nowadays she's said to be the biggest lonely clone there'll ever be. Doctor Sandra Coppola may have advice to offer her on how it's best to keep you cool when you become a research tool. Dear Henry Lax, did you know that flock of little vultures divide and conquer lesser cultures? Not much one to relax if party's even left out on the shelf and mortal leave aside itself. Dear Henry Lax, you know that podulate of science is now a giant among giants. And for a grand climax, your omnipresent question is the answer, got the black woman cancer. It's a grand humiliation, showing now across the nation, mutation on a huge scale, bigger than a blue whale, bigger than a blue whale, bigger than a blue whale, bigger than a blue whale.
Hello and welcome to Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber with Neutron Bomb and Captain B2. Pour it out thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking your proliferous journey to profit to the empathetic masses. Calling on cathartic release, expel your demons, if but for a moment increase, then cease them. Quell their influence, let them not commit treason. So today's focus is on the contribution of Henrietta Lacks to modern medicine. There's some very strong rights tonight, and whilst it's not a prerequisite, we do encourage you to join the Late Night Poets group on allpoetry.com. How are you doing tonight, Mika and Captain?
I'm doing great. It looks like we're still waiting on Captain to join us, but we do have Faziana.
Okay, no worries. Hey, Faziana.
Hello.
I was just going to say as well, we've got open poetry for the second half of the episode. So if you wanted to drop something on the board of Faziana, you're more than welcome to.
All right, I'll take a look, see if I have something. I tend to use things my shows and then I run out.
I hear you. Oh, gosh. Well, look, I would run through the history of Henrietta Lacks, but I don't want to ruin it because I think a lot of the poetry has mixed metaphor with historical accuracy. So I suppose we should just get started, and I'll drop the first poem on the board, and you will see what I mean by the end of the hour. So it won't be a moment. How's everyone doing tonight anyway?
Oh, hanging in there. Glad to have you two around.
Same.
Yeah, at least I can see this week. That was interesting last week. Got to love an aura migraine just on the day of showtime. So.
Oh, yeah, gosh. It's amazing how those can, like, completely mess up your ability to see or do anything. It's been there.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as some of the ones I've had in the past. Like, I've had ones where I've gone completely numb and they've had to take me to hospital. So, thankfully, it wasn't that bad. I just couldn't really see anything. I've got the first poem up, and it's by our illustrious Luyu Wild Dove. And Faziana, would you like to do me the honor of the first read?
Sure. Immortal Purple Cells, Henrietta Lacks, Hila, by Luyu Wild Dove. I thrive. My cells divide, replicate, 60, yes, 60 decades later, surviving medical theories, studies, darkness swallowed painful nights, green waving leaves of the tobacco fields and mama's grave are calling me home. Yet, I thrive. In those glass circular petri dishes, my stolen flesh sold, grasping origins of human illnesses taken from a family of poor slaves, growing divided cells, memories, simple ones missing, swimming in holes and night fires where laughter now burns inside, strands of inner self to birth new cures. I still want to care for my youngins, my man and my family. A brief glimmer of happiness with you calling me lovey-dovey, but the suffering that doctor felt was my agony and terror of the purple cancerous lump. I survived. To rise silently among unknown medical challenges, a miracle, a hope with no consent of patients on how our hospital bills were silently, unknowingly paid. I guess they figured I got free, so they took my cells free. We survived. Slices of night worries, slices of tearful pain, my cells flourished, named, abbreviated by my birth name, Hila. Copies of the cells for the first time flourished in biomedical research. Radium treatments given spread Black Death's tumor throughout my screaming, useless morphine body. I see Mama calling me to the rich grounds of green leaves we harvested, and I whisper to my sister, "Don't you let anything bad happen to them children when I'm gone." My cultured cells thrive, studies, testing, gene mapping, cancer, polio, vaccines, cloning. This here poor Black woman with babies, my name withheld and hidden as I help eradicate the billion-dollar industry in eradicating sicknesses. I'm back home now, scream silence next to Mama, in clover, like my name hidden. Rain falls like teardrops on this here rich earth we all once farmed. I sleep in the family plot in our unmarked graves. End poem.
Wow, what an incredibly strong write and an incredibly strong read also. Mika, would you like to make the first comment tonight?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to check out the contest beforehand, and I don't know a lot about Henrietta Lacks, but wow, this is incredible. I think it just takes me aback how well she told the story that I didn't know anything about, and how I'm able to kind of glean who this woman is and the sacrifice that she's making. And it's so evocative, especially that last stanza. Like my name hidden, rain falls like teardrops on this here rich earth we all once farmed. I sleep in the family plot in our unmarked graves. It's an incredibly strong rite, and the ending just very powerful.
Thank you, Mika. I agree with you there. For me, it was a very strong rite. Luyu's interspersed fact with metaphor in this densely laden piece. The last stanza was incredible, but on a second read, I was also drawn to slices of night worries, slices of tearful pain, my cells flourished, named, abbreviated by my birth name, Healer. I believe that is referring to not only the pain and the night worries of having cervical cancer, but also the process of biopsy. And that's what I mean. She's just danced among metaphor and historical facts in such a clever and not only clever, but a poignant manner as well. And what did you think of Faziana?
I thought it was really powerful, the mix of the science and a little bit of the personalness where she hears her mama calling her home. And there's that touch of, like, her humanity, but it also when it says there's something about it like that emphasizes the fact that her cells are living on even though she's passed away, growing divided cells, and the question of, like, is there memory in those cells, like, are we actually, like, in some way keeping her alive as we use her cells for research. I thought there was a really interesting mix of the history and the feelings in this, and you can definitely have, like, there's an emotional impact in certain stanzas, like the end where the screams are silenced and she's back to her mama. And she's worried about her kids at some points, whispering to her sister to take care of them. This is really powerful. I think this is a great one that you picked to open up the night.
Thanks, Faziana. Yeah, I thought it was actually the last entry to the contest, but I thought it just had that perfect mix of recognizing the humanity in Henrietta Lacks, and but also recognizing her contribution as well. And with that, we'll move on to the next poem, and I'll give this one a read. This one is by Theo Onick, and it's called Incisions for Our Fantasy, Live or Die. Two little cuts, and it will be all right. It will be all right. Careful, be careful now, right? If it weren't for you, I wouldn't be here having these thoughts, hopeful as they may be. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have bothered at all. I wouldn't have gotten this far. I'm sorry you had to suffer for this call. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have gotten the picture, this great frame of hope for the long-dreamed better world. It's for all of us to complete the greater scenario over the dreamer I was always. Two little incisions there to help our fantasy live. This lie of the better world of progress and prosperity will win. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have shed the right tears. Yes, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have meant anything. It is time to be graceful and say how much I care, but would spelling here my thank yous help your broken heart mend? Yes, I took my chances fighting the terrible, this monstrous goon. But saying now thank you would be the worst I can do. The lab falls in deep silence as church's day getting closed. For life will do much more. We do much more. Like death and explorations for our beloved home. Under the curtain's shadow, light of the sun sweeps on in waves of peaceful fires. extinguish flames lopes. The lab falls into darkness as night creeps in with grace. Revengeful, not a spirit, my feet find path to rest. End poem. And what did you think of the poem, Efediana?
I thought it was really interesting. I like the gratefulness here and also like a little bit of fear, but recognizing that there is hope because of these scientific advancements, because of Henrietta's contribution. It's really interesting that the lab falls into deep silence as churches day getting closed. I'm curious about that. And then in the end, my revengeful, not a spirit, my feet find path to rest. I'm a little bit curious about the revengeful, but not a spirit because she's living because of this science. I'm not quite sure I totally understand the end, but I'm intrigued by it, and I definitely want to think more about this poem.
Thanks, Efesiana. I think I'll try shed a bit of light on that. So firstly, the line that I was drawn to was two little incisions there. The story of Henrietta Lacks was that she never actually gave permission for her cells or her tissue to be used in research. For me, it seems to have been quite easy for the lab to diminish patient rights. I'd like to say in this instance, but likely in many others too, because they were collecting the tissue samples of all cancer patients for research around that time. When you consider the time and effort that went into discovering the owner of the HeLa cells, which was Henrietta Lacks, it makes you wonder how many other people's sacrifices advanced modern medicine, particularly in psychiatry, cancer, and vaccinations and the like. The lab falls in deep silence as church days getting closed, for life will do much more. We do much more like death and explorations for our beloved home. For me, I don't know why, but the imagery in this stanza really stands out to me. It reminds me of a funeral with the close of day at the church, and the silence resounding in the laboratory as they realised the exploratory value of Henrietta's cells. I thought it was a really strong write. And what did you think, Mika?
Well, great comments, both of you guys. But I also want to let you know that Bobby has joined us. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
I apologize for being late. I fell asleep.
That's all right.
I had a very busy day, and I sat down for a moment, and the next thing I knew, 15 minutes had passed.
You know what? We
no,
always did that on the same day.
Oh, dear. That would never do.
Okay. And Mika,
Mika,
did you want to make a comment? And then I'll jump on to Bobby if she read the poem.
I did not.
Yeah, I really like your guys' theme this week. Great pick, you guys. And I think that this poem also, I don't know, it's just very evocative. There's so much emotion and feeling in it. I had to go and read through the contest to get the context, because I just was like, I just need to know how deep this goes. It's really cool. I think my favorite part of it is light of the sun sweeps on in waves of peaceful fires, extinguished flames elopes. I just think that phrase is beautiful. And I don't know, I feel like both this and the first poem have this sense of closing, that there's something greater than the self going on, which I think speaks to Henrietta Lacks, but also the peacefulness at the ending. I don't know, it just really speaks to me.
Thank you, Mega. And Bobby, did you get a chance to read that, or did you want me to get you to read the next poem?
The next one, please.
No worries. So I've just put it in the forum, so it's by Mark Lupi.
Okie dokie. Oh, thank you. My computer screen has joined the conspiracy. Now it's done. It's refreshed itself, and now I can't find. There we are. Okay. Would you like me to read this?
Yes, please.
Okay. They said it was said for Henrietta. Well, they said it was said in some meeting somewhere, elsewhere, that after all, she's dead. The fact that she's alive is something we'll contrive to permanently put to bed for all, for the good of all, conceal while we construct the real. Sure, we're profited, but that's a side effect. The mirror will reflect. What we want instead, you all to observe the money we deserve. It we fully merited everything we need, which is everything you bleed. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great read, and thank you, Mark, for the poem. I think the author is 100% correct here. Her life and her rights came second to the compensation of her loved ones, whom were unaware of her ultimate contribution to modern medicine, the profiteering of corporations by the patenting of pills that belonged to Henrietta. We can't forget she was a young mother when she had passed. It would not have been difficult, given the advancements made with her cells, to help make life just a little easier for her family. Those last lines affected me greatly. Everything we need, which is everything you bleed. But moreover, I question if Henrietta Lack was a white woman, would she have been treated with such a lack of respect? And that's a question that will never be answered as far as I'm concerned. That after all, she's dead. The fact that she's alive is something we'll contrive to permanently put to bed for the good of all, conceal while we construct the real. Would there have been posthumous awards, a ticker tape parade heralding her contribution to modern medicine? And I question also whether her human rights would have been given greater weight. It was a very inspiring right. And what did you think, Mika?
Man, I think you're right on the money with that interpretation. I really liked the way that that Mark chose to approach this prompt to talk about that very real issue, which, you know, is that there were companies profiting off of her unique cells, and doing nothing to repay the contributions that she made. It's pretty incredible. I don't know that it went on like that. And I think your question that you asked about race is pretty spot on the money as well.
It's unfortunate, but you can't help think it, you know? Afasiana, what did you think?
I think that you're both right. You know, it's this commenting on the greed of the pharmaceutical companies or the researchers, and the way that she was exploited. That last line really does hit strong. Everything you bleed. And I think you're probably right about her race, that they took advantage of that in a time where they could get away with it. So it is very sad that she was exploited like that. I mean, she has done a lot of good in the help. The research has made a difference, but if they were focused on profit rather than helping her and her family, then that's just really sad.
And finally, Bobby, what did you think?
I agree. I think her race had a good bit to do with it. If you look at it in context, the time, and it's strange because I grew up in the 50s, and I remember there still being segregation, even in Chicago. And the first time, I remember the first time I saw a black face on a commercial, we're like, oh, look, there's a black person, there's a Negro on that commercial, you know, and it was extraordinary, and they were treated like second class citizens, and I think that had a good bit to do with it. If she had been white, I think the circumstances would have been entirely different. I mean, if you look at some of the other incidences of in medicine, I don't know if you're familiar with the story of Miss Evers' voice. It was a secret. It was federal government did a secret medical experiment on poor African American men in the years 32 to 72 to study the effects of untreated syphilis.
That
I think race had a good deal to do with it. And I think also if you look at the status of medicine, that has changed somewhat. Medical personnel, doctors, were deified. I mean, if you were a doctor, my God, you were this a superhuman being that could do no wrong. And if something came from a doctor's lips, it was like it came from the burning bush. I mean, people questioning medical personnel was unheard of. So I think that had a lot to do with it. And I think the poem itself, for the brevity and the way it is rhymed, I think that adds impact to what the poet is saying. And I think he's including all of that. Oh, sure, we're profited, but it's a side effect. The mirror will reflect it. We fully merit everything we need, which is everything you bleed. Medicine was not questioned. They pretty much had carte blanche in a lot of things they did. And it's only just, I think, in the last several decades where people have questioned the medical ethic, because the Hippocratic Oath is first do no harm. And I don't think that was always at the forefront when they were doing things, especially when they got target, what I call target fixation. They got goal-oriented, they wanted to get something done, and you weren't allowed to stand in the way. So I think that is captured, I think, very well and with some very skilled metaphor in this piece.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great comment. And Mika, would you be able to read the next poem by Pink Fairy 5?
Absolutely. I would love to. Okay. Thank you for your resilient HeLa cells, Henrietta. Some people donate retinas and kidneys when they die. Henrietta Lacks passed in 1952, having no idea what she donated. She had an aggressive cervical cancer and was treated at Hopkins. Dr. George Gray had been trying to keep cells alive in his lab. After hundreds of failed attempts, he lucked upon Henrietta's cells, the only cells to ever survive and grow, a 1 in 3 billion chance. Scientists have named Henrietta Lacks cells resilient cells. Their nickname is HeLa cells, named for their donor. HeLa cells have saved millions of lives in the years since her death. They have been used to test polio, helped in the development of in vitro fertilization, and have helped in hundreds of medical advancements. So thank you, Henrietta Lacks, a young black woman with 5 children whose thriving and surviving miracle cells have traveled to outer space. They have also been cultured and sold around the world without any compensation going to her family. End poem.
Thank you, Mika. Great read. And thank you, Pink Fairy, for the write. And Afasiana, would you like to comment first this time?
Well, this was so informative. I feel like I learned a lot reading this. You can tell she did some research on it. She dove into the truth of things, and she expressed it very clearly. I'm really blown away by Henrietta Lacks' story and how it's all come together. So I'm lost within the content more than the form in this case, but I think Pink Fairy did a good job at telling us about it.
Thanks, Aphasiana. Great comment. And Mika, would you like to go next?
Yeah, I like how Pink Fairy 5, you know, often she does this when we do our Bad Bitches contest as well. You know, she is able to use her poetry to just write a tribute to the person that we're honoring. And I really appreciate that, especially with someone like this that's so unknown. I had no idea about her. I've never heard of her. And so it's cool that anyone who stumbles on her poem is going to be educated and understand the contribution that Henrietta played. I think she'll have a lot of people Googling Henrietta who just happened to read her piece, which is really cool to give her some exposure that she's lacking.
Thanks, Mika. Bobby, would you like to comment next?
Sure. I think this was an excellent narrative. She rendered the facts very skillfully. It is a lovely tribute. One of the things I was looking for when I generated this contest was in the previous poem, you get more of a sense of the author's personal feelings about the event. And I don't get this. I don't get any kind of sense of personal opinion or feeling from this piece. Not to say that makes it a bad piece. I was just hoping for more reflective content and saying, you know, I think this is terrible, or I think Johns Hopkins ought to be burned to the ground, or something else, you know, something that reflects how the author was affected by Henrietta Lacks' story. And I probably am wrong in saying that, because when I read this, I was outraged. I was absolutely outraged. That's why I put it out there, because I wanted people to realize that there are things that that do occur sub rosa. And until you have people like Rebecca Skloot, who said, hey, I wonder how the family feels about this, and does 10 years of research and brings it to the forefront. If it hadn't been for her asking questions of herself and of the family, we probably still would know nothing about this.
Very true. I did a bit of research myself following on from Pink Fairy's piece. Henrietta Lacks' cells were vital in the human race surviving a pandemic, which is polio. And from my research,
yes,
it affects
yes.
children under the age of 5. And also with the contribution to IVF, which is largely relied on these days, given the age with which women are now having children, at least in the Western world, you could almost say she's been a patron saint of children in my eyes.
Yes.
And
yes, absolutely.
She left the world quite young with 5 children herself and benefited the human race. But as Pink Fairy also indicated, she did not have knowledge of her contribution. There was no compensation for these children, her grandchildren. And one would hope that donor rights are now being followed. It goes to show that scientific progress is ethically muddied, as far as I'm concerned. And even today, it is vital to have oversight into the research undertaken. But more importantly, I think it's vital to respect the needs of the few as well as the many. And maybe you don't always have that perspective if you're right amongst the research. So, I thought it was very thought-provoking and informative. And I'll just jump onto the next poem. Might be a moment. Okay. And Aphasiana, if you could give this one a read when I put it in the forum. It's by Randa Yosri.
Okay. Life Supporter by Randa Yosri. She is the key of life. For others, she strives. She is the captain of the ship who drives. She keeps the unity like the queen bees in their hives. With pleasure, she is ready to receive all the sharp knives. She exerts much sweat to fulfill most needs, virtue and morality in her breed. She plants the seeds. She tries hard to teach the importance of good deeds. Source of kindness, all the expectations she exceeds. She is one of a kind, can never be compared. A great fighter, you should not be dared. She must be honored. Her sacrifices should be declared. To repay her, you have to be prepared. End poem.
Thank you, Aphasiana. That was a great read. And thank you, Randa, for the poem. And, Captain, would you like to go first this time?
Sure. I found it interesting that when we opened it up for pre-writes, this was the first one that popped in. And I thought, how serendipitous that that the pre-write has so many qualities in it that apply to the theme of the concert or to the contest. She is one of a kind, can never be compared. A great fighter, you should not be dared. Well, the great fighter are her cells, which again, serendipity. They survived the coincidence, the odds being astronomical, that the right person in the right place at the right time. I call that the cosmic crapshoot. She's the key of life for others. She is the strive. She's captain of the ship who drives. Again, there's so many lines in here that are so applicable that I think it's a very well done brevity and very applicable to the theme.
Thank you, Captain. And Mika, what did you think? Mika, are you on mute?
Mission Control to Mika. Come in, Mika.
I'll give my comment in the meantime. Can you hear me, Captain?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Oh, good, good. I'm just making sure we didn't all drop. So, I like that the poem captured Henrietta on a personal level, not just her contribution to modern medicine. So Henrietta was a person with a past, a family. And then I refer to this part, a great fighter, you should not be dared. She must be honored. Her sacrifices should be declared. To repay her, you have to be prepared. But as it begs the question, how does one repay her for the contribution her cells have made? Contribution to the family would be a start. Free health care for her descendants would be another. But above all, I think we are all in some way indebted to her ultimate sacrifice, directly or indirectly. I thought it was a great write. And what did you think of Aphasiana?
I thought it was really interesting, and I'm surprised that a pre-write was able to connect this much, but I think it does,
yes.
You know. She received the sharp knives and that she was willing to have the biopsies, and she, you know, had to go through her treatment. She plants those seeds, so in a way her cells are the seeds that made life grow, and people were able to do things with that. She exceeds those expectations, which she totally did. Her cells made a big difference, exceeding what they thought they would be able to do. And in terms of repaying her, maybe it could be that we make similar donations, you know, donate blood, be willing to donate your organs once you pass away, or things like that, like to continue what her body started.
Yeah, almost paying it forward in a medical manner. I think that's a great concept. And next we've got a poem by I Love Poems, and I'll give this one a read. It's called Who is Henrietta Lacks? Hello, everyone. Let me tell you about Henrietta Lacks and her legacy. She was a great wife and mother of three. Sadly, she died too early at age of 31. Over 60 years ago, doctors at Johns Hopkins Hospital found a malignant tumor on her cervix during her visit. Then there was no established practices for consent. Therefore, a sample of her cancer cell was taken. Dr. Georgie was running a research almost on every cell of cancer patients. Unfortunately, all their cells died. While Henrietta Lacks cells doubled roughly every 24 hours, and HeLa cells became the only human cell line able to reproduce indefinitely. It touched almost every area of medicine, from studying zero gravity on cells to chemotherapy, cloning, polio vaccine, and even in vitro fertilization. Did you know her immortal cells, if ever grown end to end, surely they would wrap around Mother Earth at least three times and spanning more than 350 million feet? End poem. And what did you, firstly, Mika, are you back with us?
Yes, sorry, I just got back. Sorry, I had to run.
Oh, that's all right. I just wanted to double check whether you dropped or not. That's okay. Did you want to let us
know? No, I texted you in the chat, my bad. I thought you would see it.
Okay, sorry about that.
No worries.
Did you have a chance to listen to that poem?
I didn't get to hear it. I'm just reading through it really quick if you want to come back to me.
No worries at all. Captain, what did you think?
I really appreciated, again, a very fine chronology. And then the last couple of sentences or stanzas touched almost every area of medicine, from studying zero gravity on cells to chemotherapy, cloning, polio vaccine. And I fortunately, generations past the 50s are blissfully unaware of how terrifying polio was in the 50s. You go to school and you come one day, just the person sitting next to you was gone, and it would take children with such rapidity, and they had no vaccine. When Salk finally developed the vaccine, it was monumental. It was something that children were vaccinated. Everyone got it, and it was I'm looking for the right word. It was astounding how much importance that particular vaccine had. And again, without her cells to test, they have to test everything. And without the cells for any kind of testing of things, you wouldn't have half the things. Did you know her immortal cells? I love this one. Your immortal cells have ever grown end to end, or surely would wrap around Mother Earth at least three times. I think that's wonderfully. It gives you a sense of the gravity, the size, the magnitude. There's the word I was looking for. The magnitude of exactly how important these cells are. I really enjoyed the way she did the last several stanzas, very thought provoking.
Thanks, Captain. And Faziana, what did you think?
Again, I felt like I learned a lot from this, and I agree with Bobby that I really like the ending, which I think magnitude is the perfect word for it. of how much she has contributed and, like, how many cells have been used from her. It's amazing to me that I didn't even know about her, and she's had such a huge impact on the world.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to believe that a single woman was so vital to the human race in such a prolific manner. And one cannot help but attest to the fact that she was a mother first and foremost, but she was also a patient and a savior to so many that benefited directly and indirectly from the research conducted with her healer cells. Yeah, I agree with you there, Faziana. I had no idea of Henrietta Lacks before this contest, and there are a lot of people that had no idea about Henrietta Lacks for years afterwards. As Captain was saying, it was down to the research of one scientific writer who was, I believe, interested in determining the existence of the healer cells after her school attendance. Yeah. And what did you think, Mika?
I'm just really glad you guys chose this theme so I could learn about this person. And, you know, this is another very educational piece, letting everyone know, you know, what happened. And I thought it was interesting they said there was no established practices for consent, which means that she may not have even, I don't know if this was in the information or not, because I didn't get to read it all the way, but she didn't even consent to her her cells being used in these experiments. And yet the effect that it had is so huge and so broad. And I like the idea of her immortal cells. You know, it's just a really well done poem.
Thanks, Mika. And Mika, would you be able to give the next poem by Babla a read?
Absolutely, I'd be honored. So this is We Did Not Ask, Henrietta Lacks by Babbler. We did not ask. A snip in a sterile room, an uncomfortable swab, we took, and we did not ask. A piece held hostage, replication error dialed in for unstoppable growth, birthing mothers bearing daughter cells, splitting and rending in two, mockery of a whole. Zooming in on moistened slices, observing monotonous life in a circular nursery of agar, prodded by a pipette, looking for the secrets that might save us all. Microscopic somatic daughters, absconded from the cervical cradle, convent of angelic saviors, dressed in host violet and cloistered in bits of glass. We did not ask, and now we have a name. We see her face, and we did not ask for the billions of daughters waved in a flask. End poem.
That was a great read, Mika, and thank you, Babla, for such a prolific poem. I just think it's so fucking spot on. We did not ask. We never gave her an opportunity to say yes or no. That last stanza really hit home for me. We did not ask, and now we have a name. We see her face, and we did not ask for the billions of daughters raised in a flask. Of the contribution to modern medicine that Henrietta made, there was no compensation to the family. They had the opportunity to unveil her legacy to her family. I don't believe they were protecting her privacy. In my eyes, they were protecting their interests. I really like this piece here as well. A piece held hostage, replication error dialed in for unstoppable growth, birthing mothers bearing daughter cells, splitting and rending in two, mockery of a whole. I could literally quote the whole poem, but this stanza got me so fired up. The clinical means with which you wrote it, Babla, is, in my opinion, exactly how she was viewed as new tissue for research. It was a bloody brilliant write, and it was added to the finalists, so quite understandably so. And what did you think of Faziana?
I really love this. I thought the way that she worded things was very clever. Microscopic somatic daughters absconded from the cervical cradle. I think absconded is a really key word there. And I loved the billions of daughters raised in a flask. Oh, and also cloistered in bits of glass. The really interesting word choices here that you capture the audience, and it's very telling of her attitude towards it too. You know, the hostage, and like just pointing out that this was not a consensual thing, and I really love the way that Babbler described this and used the daughters cleverly, because they do call it a daughter cell. You know, like there are daughter cysts and things like that, where it's like because of the way it multiplies. But just using daughter also makes you think about, you know, like as in terms of like children and the generations of people who have been influenced by her cells. Like you had said, like almost like a patron saint of children. I think that daughter was a really key word in this, and she repeats it a few times, the daughter cells, and I think that's a purposeful choice.
Great comment, Aphasiana, spot on. And what did you think, Captain?
Oh, I thought this was a splendid piece. Very impressive, because she took the summary from the theme and clearly has a knowledge of science, because she used quite a bit of scientific terminology in here. Auger is the medium, a gelatinous medium that they use in petri dishes to grow cells, which when she talked about cloistered in bits of glass, clearly she's talking about petri dishes. And again, she's introduced language like somatic, related to the body. Very good. I mean, the attention to detail in this. Hushed violet is used specifically for staining the nuclei of living or fixed cells in tissue. This is a really impressive light in its attention to detail and how it approaches both scientifically and from the humanitarian approach. I agree with Faziana, the daughter cells that stress that these were all derived from her. They've proven invaluable in science. While Hopkins did not profit from this, I found that interesting. Hopkins does not profit from this, but if you think about all the medical developments that have evolved because of the ability to have living cells and to test and all the money that's changed hands on these new medical procedures and tests like in vitro fertilization, it's stunning. But this is a splendid rite. I really, really, especially the last stanza, we did not ask, and now we have a name, we see a face, and we did not ask for the billions of daughters raised in a flask. Really, really terrific rite.
Thanks, Captain. Great comment. And Mika, what did you think?
I just have to agree with Faziana about the use of daughter cells and the kind of the birth imagery that she brought in and how that related to the fact that it was cervical cancer. I feel like there's something really cool about the way that she was paying homage to Henrietta Lacks, and also talking about birthing and daughters, like the legacy of Henrietta Lacks is something that was birthed from herself. So it's just, I don't know, I feel like there was such a dual meaning in that, and it was very, very well done.
Thanks, Mika. And because we were a bit short on rights, I don't know why. Sometimes the prompts are grabbed with whole heart and hand. But I wrote one for this as well. I didn't submit it to the contest, so I'll give this a read. It's a brevity. It's called Genome
Collusion. Oh, great.
Collusion.
Thank you. Oh, wonderful.
So it goes, a hydrangea flower in full bloom scraped of pollen. Her smile dazzled like dewdrops on petals from the vine to advanced science. Abnormal pollen procured from the stamen cloned for the propagation of the species. This genome collusion representative of a violation of a woman of color reduced to a pseudonym, Hela. Sold to a seed bank, her cells made corporations rich off the back of her legacy. End poem. And what did you think, Captain?
I thought that was outstanding. No, seriously, I'm very glad that you penned this because you have captured the spirit of the theme of the contest. I mean, this is this genome collusion representative violation of a woman of color reduced to a pseudonym. I really, really appreciate that line. I think that is that. I think that epitomizes what has happened here. She's become a non-entity and is not the source of the cells. Is unrecognized. The cells themselves have taken on their own life and their own existence, but the source of the cells has not been recognized. So I really appreciate this write. I don't know if everyone saw that in the summary, I did find out that her family has since been apprised of what happened, and the medical community has been looking for a way to compensate them. But what I really appreciate is that her grandson, Henrietta's grandson, David Lacks, now sits on a board at the National Institutes of Health and helps to decide what research her gene sequence is used for. So there has been some restitution there, and her granddaughter speaks across the country about her grandmother's legacy in the cells. So I think that is that's marvelous. But I agree that the whole incident boils down to a lack of consent. And I think your parallel to the flower is a wonderful metaphor for the cells. Because there you have also the essence of the flowers being able to breed and to be modified. So I think that's very well done, and I'm very glad you wrote this.
Thanks, Captain. And what did you think, Nika?
I loved this. I thought it was a really beautiful write. I think that there's been a lot of pieces that talk about you know, her contribution that are uplifting about her. And then there's been some pieces that talk about the way that we took without asking, as Babbler put it. But the way that you put it, I think, captures the sadness of that probably the best. A hydrangea flower in full bloom scraped of pollen. Just that word scraped really just makes you, like, kind of grit your teeth. And that is what it is. And, that last couple lines are very powerful as well.
Thanks, Mika. And finally, Aphasiana, what did you think?
I thought it was great. It has what everyone else has been saying, you know, it has that impact of recognizing the injustice that happened. The scraped hit me too, like Mika was saying, and that it makes sense as they were going from her cervical cancer, that pollen, because pollen is kind of like a reproducing thing for the plant, so scraping the pollen, and then the way you worded plucked from the vine to advance science. And yes, advancing science is good, but the way you say plucked from the vine, it's like you took this beautiful flower away from life for the sake of other things. And I thought that was really a creative way of doing it, that you keep going with the pollen later on, the abnormal pollen procured. You keep this metaphor going in a really great way, sold to a seed bank. And the corporation's rich off the back of her legacy. This is really powerful. And like Bobby was saying, reduced to a pseudonym, that is an important line right there. And it's like we don't even recognize her personhood when we're just thinking about HeLa cells. And that's horrible that she's not being recognized as a person. So I think that you've done this really well. And I love the way you have like the italics in every second stanza, and the way that you've broken it down is really great.
Thanks, Ephesiana. And that actually wraps up our poetry for the Henrietta Lacks contest. So now we're going to actually move on to some open poetry from some of our previous contests and carryovers. And I will get Captain to read the first poem, and this is actually from the Abraham Lincoln quote contest about reputation and character. And it's by Sean Heaney.
Okay. I'm looking at I think there's something going on with my computer. He's refreshing the screen and shifting things around. Like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like our group. Okay, there we go. If Shadows by Sean Heaney. Son, be the me I couldn't be. Mean of me and your mom, product of our summation. Common factors, average height and blurry blue eyes. Fractional good looks. Nary more to the equation, a constant that is prime, that must never be belayed. The nature of your character is wind's drive, dusting forward, steered by angels' hands, forceful grip at 10 and 2, speeding like cat's flies. But by a length, one skid can change your trip plans. Crash course shift, grinding in reverse overdrive, interlocked fingers as we walk sun at our back. I pointed to the path ahead and asked what he saw. Just shadows, Dad. Curious why one he should lack. Know whose cast eclipsed me as a kid? Your grandpa. You see, you're still learning. And it's my job to teach. Someday soon, you'll surpass my silhouette, sure to pass on what I know, open arms outreached. You'll reach an umbra of proportions I couldn't get. You see the people walking towards us, they will meet your shaded contoured drape before they see your flesh and blood, and I will make up their opinion from that shape. Make certain that noble deeds are hearkened, for he is a harbinger of the man standing behind. Funny, if we walk the walk, the other way we will darken the spots we already were before we got there. They are specters of your presented past patterns. A cake that has risen cannot again be batter. Leaving tracks of transgression or a guiding lantern. You're a good man doing one bad thing defined by the latter. Your shadow can be a flag, a banner, raised stars saluted, or white and ragged, flaccid, stained, sullied, and scorned. Everything you do, every little decision, pure or polluted, forms your emblem, fabric, stitched strong or tattered. An inner reveal cannot be covered like a doctored speckle, a deformed, degenerate, dawning, dark veil mist to hide. Men can become instant sinners, insidious spectacles, or choose cloth covering unstained by false pride. Son, be the man I couldn't be. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. I like the way that that Sean actually danced with the prompt and skillfully so, through a passing on of knowledge from generation to generation. I particularly like the extended metaphor of the flag representing the shadow or reputation. My favorite part was, your shadow can be a flag, a banner, raised stars saluted, or white and ragged, flaccid, stained, sullied, and scorned. And then it goes on further down, forms your emblems, fabric stitched strong or tattered. Very well done. And what did you think, Mika?
I thought it was really philosophical and very, I don't know, like the beginning talking about the shadow being the grandfather, and soon you'll have, you'll surpass my silhouette. And you know, the shadow talk was kind of reminding me of, like the story of like Jesus's footprints in the sand when he carried you or something like that. It was almost like something so allegorical that it felt like I'd heard it before, but then it went to something else. A cake that has risen cannot again be batter. What an interesting metaphor with the cake. And then it goes on. I feel like it got stronger every line in the ending. The line that you call out, the flaccid, stained, sullied, and scorned, that was a really good one. And I don't know, there was a lot of wisdom within it about how your actions create the impressions that others see. So,
thanks, Michael. Great comment. And what did you think, Bobby?
I really thought this was a splendid piece. This is a very complex write. A lot of texture, a lot of, like Gabig said, philosophy. I thought it interesting that some of the references, fractional good looks, nary more to the equation. I found it interesting, and I don't know if people caught this, forceful grip at 10 and 2, speeding like cat fives, by a length one skid can change your trip. That directly refers to, I know, because my dad was a professional driver, 10 and 2 is the grip that you have or supposed to have on the steering wheel when you drive. Your hand is at, your left hand is at 10 o'clock, your right hand's at 2 o'clock. And I thought that was a very interesting metaphor, talking about guiding your life. But one skid can change your trip plan, a crash course shifting, grinding in reverse. Again, a great metaphor for life and how something can change so suddenly. It sounds like a father telling his son to be the best person he can be. And he again, it's so layered. And I agree, the metaphor, a cape that has risen cannot again be better. It's interesting. I never really thought about that. Really, your shadow can be a flag, a banner, raised, star saluted, or white and ragged. Again, he's presenting the fact that in his life he has choices, and those choices are going to represent how he's perceived and who he is. And I like the way that it is bookended by the sentence, son, be the me, be the man I couldn't be, be the me I couldn't be the man I couldn't be. I really thought this was a very thoughtful light.
Thanks, Captain. Great comment. And Ephesiana, would you like to close out the comments for this poem?
I really loved it. I like that it talked about the shadow before you and after you. So depending on which way you're going, that it talked about sometimes people will see your shadow before they see the real you, and they'll make your judgment on it. So like it would be like the things that people hear about you will shape things. So you got to make sure that you're projecting a good shadow ahead of yourself, that your reputation precedes you in a good way. And then also the shadow will fall behind you. So it's thinking about your legacy. What have you left behind? I thought that was really clever how it talked about it in both directions. And like everyone else has said, that cake line was fantastic.
Thanks, Ephesiana. That was a great comment. She is, isn't she? Oh, gosh. You all are, to be honest. First hour was epic, and we've got some good poetry to catch up on from the other shows. So with that, I will read the next one, which is called The Sweat Off My Brow by Heartthrob. And it was written to the quote, "You cannot escape the responsibility of tomorrow by evading it today." And it goes, "Duty will find its path, trudging through the trenches of tomorrow's yesterday. The one can only comprehend day by day what's certain. Obligation takes no prisoners. But the future sought can skip no steps, must be wholeheartedly achieved. The latter shall not be attained without the prior being enforced. Certain measures must be met, as for today is but a stepping stone, a marker indicating the direction." End poem. And what did you think, Mika?
Obligation takes no prisoners, I thought was a really cool line. But the future sought can skip no steps, must be wholeheartedly achieved. It's kind of making me feel bad about, like, all the things that I haven't started working on that I know I need to. So I feel like it's convicting me a little bit. It's making me, like, think about the future sought can skip no steps, must be wholeheartedly achieved. And I guess you have these fantasies in your mind of how everything will fall together and everything will just work out. But, you know, using that kind of fantasy world as an escape to avoid taking those steps that you have to take is an easy trap to fall into.
Yeah, I actually totally agree with you being a master procrastinator over here. Firstly, I also thought obligation takes no prisoners was a great turn of phrase and so very true. There's a lot of advice and wisdom in this poem, palpably so. So my favorite part was, "As for today is but a stepping stone, a marker indicating the direction." It reminds me of this saying, "There is no yesterday, there is no tomorrow, only today." If only I could claim that as my personal mantra, but I'm merely referencing it in this case. So what did you think of Fabiana?
I liked it. I like the part that you just mentioned, the today is but a stepping stone, a marker indicating the direction. You know, we can't expect results immediately. You have to take it one step at a time, and you can't skip those steps. So recognizing that you always have to be working a little bit towards it is wisdom. I think you're right. There's a lot of wisdom in here.
Thanks, Ephesiana. Great comment. And Captain, would you like to close out the comments for this poem? Are you on mute by any chance?
I am, and I was being profound, damn it. I think this is a very very thoughtful, very profound write. I especially like the center stanza, but the future sought can skip no steps, must be wholeheartedly achieved. I really like the way this very subtly, the whole verse, the whole piece suggests that in order to achieve what you want, you must remain in the moment. Certain measures must be met as for today, but as a stepping stone. It talks about being in the moment. You can only comprehend day by day what certain, and again, I agree with everyone's comments prior, obligation takes no prisoners. That was brilliant. That's a bloody brilliant comment. This is a very, very well done piece.
Thanks, Captain. That was a great comment. And we're actually going to move on to the next prompt. I've got about four rights for this one, and this is from our Dr. Seuss contest, Everything Stinks Till It's Finished. And I'll give this one a read, but first I'll make sure that I've actually put it in the forum so everyone can follow along with it. Won't be a moment. Let's see. No, I haven't. All right, I'll do that first. So this one's by our girl, Felon. And it goes, just a push in the beginning. Lifting off fingers of a brisk, swift breeze, tugging at the senses, tumbling into somersaults to back handspring, following with other moves as a gymnast. Toxic cloud scent, so proud of release, some don't mind sharing their business. Creeping to a call, cilia response, leaving the inhale speaking with accent in British. Crop dusting is an art stewing in the belly to a brew and knowing when to extinguish. Giggles as victims cross its gas and blitz steps to game of scrimmage. Scent lays thin as the cloud descends its gust, grins when sewage diminishes. Ask Dr. Seuss to rhyme why everything smells till it's finished. End poem. What did you think, Captain?
How shall I say this diplomatically? I think this whole I think this whole piece is dedicated, shall we say, to Iphletus. Does everyone know what that means? I believe the colloquial term is breaking wind. And the analogies, I mean, the different crop dusting, toxic cloud said so proud, a release some don't mind sharing their business. I love this. So clever and so skillfully written. I mean, I don't think I've read anything quite this clever and creative, except for the piece, some, I think it was last year, that someone went and assembled all the analogies and euphemisms for coitus.
Ah, that was Babla.
Oh yeah, I love that. God, that was epic. But this one, I think, is a close second. I love giggles as victims cross as death and blitz sense laid thin. The humor in this, and it's cerebral humor, because I mean there's a four letter word that we could all evoke, but the descriptions are so colorful that I can't help but appreciate the depth of this piece.
Yeah, it was I think it was a magnificent answer to the prompt, and it had a classic Felon twist to it. Yeah, and I read it a few times to truly let it percolate, so to speak. I was drawn to the toxic cloud scent, so proud of release, some don't mind sharing their business. Someone that has released a gas from the depths of their bowels, the depths of hell. But like, it also speaks to me of an oversharer not afraid to share their own business, leaving the person burdened, speaking with a British accent, so I thought it was really well done. And what did you think, Mika?
I love your guys' comments on it. I guess this this line crosses gas and blitz steps to a game of scrimmage reminded me of how my coworkers used to have this ongoing war of who could crop dust the worst. And, like, it was really bad because the way between, like, the counters where we help customers and the back counters where we, like, set things that we're working on is really narrow. And so my fiancé, who was my boss at the time, used to walk between and, like, ask if we needed anything. And I thought he was just being helpful. But actually then, like, he would walk away and, like, the customer would smell it first and then you would. And, like, there's no way to, like, tell the customer that it wasn't you. So you would have to, like, just take the heat for it or say nothing.
Oh,
and,
no.
It was pretty bad. But another coworker got him by farting at the base of a ladder while he had a huge TV in his hand. And he couldn't, like, set it down fast enough, and he was, like, completely red and, like, huffing and puffing. It was so bad. But I love the poem. Like, we have had a lot of serious rites tonight that I think are very thought-provoking, and I think this one, to me, is just, like, unfettered fun, especially when you talk about it's a game of
yes.
scrimmage. Like,
oh,
who can get the other one the worst?
Beautifully said. And the one thing that just occurred to me while you were speaking is there also not only do we have olfactory issues here, but we've forgotten that there are auditory elements involved in this too. My father used to refer to it as a mouse on a motorcycle.
And what did you think of Fabiana?
It was funny. I mean, it's hard to add what all of you have said because you pointed out, like, all the awesome bits. I really liked the giggles as victims cross its gas and blitz steps into a game of scrimmage. Just, like, the victims. You can tell that it's, like, a purposeful fart. I have this one friend who has a six-year-old son, and she posted on Facebook, like, probably about a month ago, it's happened the first time he aggressively farted. It was like aggressive. So it was an attack.
Oh,
my goodness.
And, Fabiana, would I be able to get you to read the next one by rite of passage? This is also for the Dr. Zeus prompt.
Mm-hmm. Asymmetrical sound by rite of passage. Asymmetrical sound, palpable, piquant, pastel scream, surrounded by portentous dream, seafoam and symmetry, loquacious land, shuddering snow and sibilant sand, caustic, cacophonous, calypso clouds, awed by eloquent, elongated shrouds, burnt to mere nothingness, negated, not, turbulent, truculent, trickling thought, dense and dowdy, docile and dubious, rousing and rowdy, quiet and studious, grating, gallumphing, gruesome, ground, supine and succulent, asymmetrical sound. And poem. Man, so Beast used to say on the disability show, that was a lot of $5 words.
Oh, yeah.
If there was anything that was hard to say, she'd be like, you owe me $20. I can't do her accent, but I feel like there was a lot of $5 words in this one.
And you'd probably get a mm-hmm from your mate. So. Hang on 1 second. I'll get Captain to go first with the comment this time. What did you think?
Were you calling on me?
Yep.
Oh, first, I think it was a splendid read. Very well done. I mean, because there was a little bit of tongue twisting in there, and the word play in this is quite skilled. We've got a lot of assonance and consonance and alliteration going on in here. So we've got all of those elements in play, and we've shaped the verse. This is a very clever write and cerebral, because you've got to have some very, very adroitly written, dense and dowdy, docile and dubious, rousing and rowdy, quiet and studious. I was impressed by that rhyming in there, that internal rhyme. This is extremely, it's a fun piece, but it also is a challenging piece in terms of thought-provoking and of reading. So my compliments to Rite of Passage. This is a very, very well-done piece.
Yeah, I agree. My favorite part was caustic, cacophonous, calypso clouds, awed by the eloquent,
yeah,
elongated clouds.
There,
it reminds
there you go.
Me of a,
yeah,
thunderstorm. Yeah, but only the shrouds are acid rain. I found the alliteration, assonance and whatnot very, quite masterful, and it was a cohesive read. But I also appreciate the asymmetrical sound title. I think it really suited the poem. And
very much so, yeah.
We'll move on to the next one. Won't be a moment. Hang on. Hopefully I've... There we go. So this was for the Dr. Seuss contest also. I'll give this one a read. And it's by Scraps and Scribbles, The Man Who Makes the Frames. I feel just like the man who makes the frames that art ignored around the masterpiece, the checkered board ignored beneath the game, the naked sheep beneath the golden fleece, the scarred shell disgorged of breakfast yolk, the stingy weed beside the blossom tree, or flicked off ash but not the heady smoke, or other things eclipsed in its degree. Another poet, one who lived a time that seasoned all his words like aging rye, has shadowed me beneath his grey sublime and made me feel quite small beneath the sky. But when I doubt my young ability, I think that then he too was young like me. End poem. And what did you think of Adriana?
I really loved this. I thought there were some great analogies in here. I like the Golden Fleece reference, which is like a mythological story. There's so much to this. I thought it was brilliant.
Thanks. I agree. I think unless you're a narcissistic type, this all affects this at one point, the feeling of being overlooked. Scraps and Scribbles has painted a picture of the insecurity that comes with young ability. And you almost have to keep going at your own pace and never let the shadow of someone else block you from shining. But that's easier said than done. And I find no matter how good you are, there is always someone better or with a unique perspective. So you've just got to focus on your own swim lane and personal best. Very nicely written. And what did you think, Mika?
Oh, man, I really like this. Especially because I like paintings a lot, and having to buy the frames, like getting a nice frame is really expensive, and like it makes such a huge difference. But he's right that they're overlooked. The naked sheep beneath the golden fleece, discarded shell disgorged of breakfast yolk. Like, what interesting metaphors he's brought to this. And also, you know, I'm kind of a person who has a lot of like growing up, my family was very like religious in a way that wasn't healthy, and men were always considered like above women, and I think a lot of my life I spent trying to live up to my brother, because he was my dad's oldest son. I felt like always beneath him, and so like this angst is speaking to me. It was a stingy weed beside the blossom tree, or flicked off ash but not the heady smoke, or other thing eclipsed in its degree. That whole, you know, living in someone else's shadow, never appreciated, never understood as, you know, as what you add. It spoke to me.
Thanks, Mika. That was a great comment. And Captain, would you like to close out the comments for this poem?
Sure. I also I like the fact that this is very thought provoking. I think we've got a sonnet in disguise here, which I thought was very clever, because it's got the rhyming pattern, it's got the meter, it's got enjambment going on in here, which is a challenge when you're writing. But I like the fact that what really rose to the surface for me on this was the ancillaries of things that were pointed out, and I'd never considered this before until we talk about the art, ignoring we ignore the frame, we look at the masterpiece. We look at the game, we ignore the game board, the discarded eggshell, the flicked off ash, and it made me think of how many instances in life we see like this, but then it applies to people as well. How certain people are overlooked, they blend with their environment, and they're treated the same as the flicked off ash. They're not even noticed. They're ancillary. They're coincidental. They're coincidental to the primary. And I really appreciated that thought pattern. Has really, like I said, I really found something in that very stimulating for me. Of course, I make some really strange linkages, so please forgive me and forget what I said.
Oh, gosh. And on that note, we'll jump to the next song. That was just terrible. That was terribly rude of me. But I'll give this one a ring, and we'll forget my rudeness. So this one's by Muzz, and it's called Procrastinate, and this was written for the Dr. Seuss prompt as well. Okay, time to get some work done. When it's good, it's quite fun. Lock the door and make it quiet. Now to type up a write. Write some words and a pun. Sigh. There's that flashy dipshit always taunting me to quit. I won't be broken by a cursor. Listen to me. I'm an author. Ignore him. Calm down. Recommit. Humph. Now that damn clock chimes in. Ha! It won't get under my skin. As its hands do their waltz slowly to the pace of my pulse. Need a new draft. The editor's waiting. Close eyes. Think. Just one idea that doesn't... Look at the time I should go. Nearly time for that Netflix show. I'll just take a break and a mixed drink and poem. And what did you think, Captain?
I love this. I think who among us cannot relate to procrastination to a greater or lesser degree? And this is the way it begins. Okay, time to get some work done. When it's good, it's quite fun. Lock the door and make it quiet. Now type up a riot. the effort to focus on a now the damn clock chimes in. It won't get under my skin. The desperate of effort here to focus on a task that the author simply does not want to do. And the title and the ensuing stanzas are just classic.
Captain, that was a great comment. I suppose like this poem reminds me of locking myself away from the hustle and bustle to concentrate on commenting and judging context. And no matter how much I try to organize before the day of showtime, I still have to allow a certain amount of time for lollygagging or procrastination. I just can't seem to get around this concept of procrastinating, which is funny because the previous poem was talking about seizing the day, and this is all about leaving things to the last minute. I really enjoyed the following stanza. There's that flashy dipshit always taunting me to quit. I won't be broken by a cursor. Listen to me. I'm an author. Ignore him. Calm down. Recommit. I thought it was a very creative write. And at the very least, Muzz made use of his time writing a little ditty in homage to Dr. Zeus for his birthday, writing on procrastination whilst procrastinating, and that's just priceless. So very well done. And what did you think, Mika?
I really liked it. I related to it as you guys were talking about. But there's some really cool lines in it. I don't know. I like the way that he was talking about arguing with the cursor and calling the cursor a flashy dipshit. I don't know. That was, like, cathartic for me.
Got to take myself off mute. Almost made me a bitch, but I survived. Afasiana, what did you think?
The Netflix thing made me laugh because the whole point of Netflix is it's on demand. So look at the time. I should go. It's nearly time for that Netflix show. Like, it's not like it's like on cable where you have to be there for a certain time to catch the show. Like, you're choosing. I'm just going to watch this instead. So that really made me laugh. Oh, it's time for my Netflix show. We got to do this now. Yeah, I thought it was a nice touch
to
specifically say Netflix. Yeah.
It's funny because that's the thing he's not procrastinating about. The one thing that he could. Oh, gosh. So we're moving on to the next prompt, and these two poems are from the Rolling Stones' War Children, What Is It Good For? Prompt and song. And I'll just bring...
Neutron? I threw one of my pieces into the mix.
Fantastic, because we'll definitely need that because we're on our last two and we've got like 20 minutes, 30 minutes
okay.
left. So
okay.
I'll get
I
you
threw
up
something
after
humorous
this.
In there.
Awesome. All right, so actually what I'll do is refresh and see what I've got down the bottom here. I'll put you up first and then we'll finish on those last two. Just quickly, I've got two contests, an Albright quote about grimness and life not having to always be grim. And also, speaking of Netflix, Afasiana, I was watching this show called Top Boy and it's a little bit grim. There's about three prompts for that one too. So if you go to Neutron Bomb's profile and look at the contest, there's a couple live there, and we're certainly looking for some rights. And Captain, I'll get you up now, and then Afasiana,
right.
if you want to have a look at what contest you want to plug after Captain's read, that would be great.
Okay.
All right. So when you're ready, Captain.
All righty. I think this is something that most all of us can identify with. It's called The Parking Lot. I want to write a poem, and what have I got? Bits and pieces of language in a parking lot. And so what is this, a kind of poetic hash? All my favorite words that I've kept in a cache. Scraps of phrases that I've wanted to use, but today I'm getting no help from my muse. More random thoughts, going nowhere it seems, searching for inspiration in fleeting daydreams. This bleakness is maddening. My thoughts are on lock, suffering from the worst case of dread writer's block. I stare at the blank screen and nothing will come. It feels like my brain is gone completely numb. Then slowly, so slowly, an idle thought floats through my atrophied brain, and I scribble some notes. Another like I'm remembering how to write again, and I concentrate, I furrow my brow. The words start to build. I've got something at last. The block on my thoughts is finally past. A poem is forming, much to my delight. I don't want to leave it. I'm up half the night. I've stacked noun against verb, words that actually rhyme. The block's finally gone until the next time. This verse really was worth all the blood, sweat, and tears, because I'd rather not wait another 45 years. End poem.
Thank
and
you,
And I'll
Captain.
Read the author's note. I'll read the author's note. I began writing poetry seriously in my teens and stopped in my early 20s because my proverbial poetic well just went dry suddenly. Last October, it was October 2019, I wanted to create a special birthday gift for a writer friend, and I wrote a poem for him. At his encouragement, I began writing poetry again, discovered AP, and here I am. And it says 90 poems later. Now I'm about 264 poems later. The first drafts of several of my poems were actually composed when I was 20. So my dry spell lasted conservatively 45 years.
Wow, that's some hectic writer's block, man. I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed this poem. I like the reference to parking lot. And you've just mentioned in your author note there as well, it's a placeholder for capturing thoughts and ideas that should be followed up at a later date. And I find that the contests that they run on AP are the ultimate answer to writer's block for me. And but you still have those days, sometimes weeks, sometimes months, where it's just not, it's inescapable, really, the writer's block.
Yeah.
So, 45 years, though, that's a hectic fucking writer's block right there. So
stop that one. I stopped writing when I was in my 20s, and I started again in 2019.
Well,
but oddly enough,
she started again, so that's damn good.
Yeah, oddly enough,
and what did
the notebook that I had all my drafts in, I kept right at hand.
And what did you think, Mika?
Oh, man, this is relatable for sure. I love the parking lot image, especially because I have a parking lot note on my phone where I, like, constantly, like, put, like, things that I want to write into something else. The kind of poetic hash, all my favorite words that I've kept in a cache. I love that. I related to it very, very much. And I enjoy hearing the story behind it and hearing, you know, basically seeing where you've come from that.
Thank you.
And what did you think of Asiana?
I liked it. I like scraps of phrases that I've wanted to use. I do tend to, like, literally have scraps of paper that just have little phrases on them that I think of at random times. Or, like, if I'm inspired by something, then I'll write it down. I have, like, sticky notes everywhere, or I have notes on my phone. So that part I related to. Sometimes I don't know what the heck I was talking about. Like, I'm doing laundry, and I take the stuff out of my pockets, and I'm like, what? Random napkin with writing on it. Because at the time, I was like, this is going to be great. Maybe. I really liked the block on my thought has finally passed. Part of, like, my username comes from aphasia, which is a difficulty with language due to brain damage. And I find that poetry actually gets me past the block. That's just on thoughts in general. Like, sometimes I get stuck and I can't think at all. Like, just in general, I can't think. And then for some reason, things come out in poems. So instead of writer's block, I have, like, thinker's block or, like, speaking block. And the writing is the only part that comes out. So I have backwards block happening, but I really related to this poem.
And Aphasiana, did you have any contests that you wanted to mention that are coming up for both your shows?
Yes, thank you. So for Part Sinner, Part Saint, which is after midnight, which is technically Saturday morning, although for me it's Friday night. And my quote is, he ran his hands over my past, lingering over the dents and worn edges of my heart. And when I thought he'd run away like the others had, he told me I was a warrior and that I'd never fight another battle alone. So that's by Alpha, and I found it on Word Porn.
Oh.
And that's called Dents of the Past, Four Parts Sinner, Parts Saint. And then the following week on Thursday for Double Helix, which is the show that I do with Dexter, the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, the concept is the concept of you continuous, or does past you continually fade into the present and future you? In other words, what part of you sticks around over time, considering that the atoms that make up your body are constantly being replaced and your memories are always changing? So basically we want to know, like, what is the essential you? What is the core you that is always there?
Wow. I'm going to have to be really drunk when I write that one.
It should be interesting. Now, that one is the early show, so you have to be a little bit more appropriate. Part Sinner, Part Saint, you can be naughty, but Double Helix, you have to behave a little bit.
Just a little bit. All right. And we'll jump on to the next prompt. So this one was the war prompt, and I'll just put Stephen NY in the forum. And, Captain, would you be able to read this poem for me?
Yes, ma'am. This is Bosom of Stone by Stephen NY. Thoughts on the Khmer Rouge Reeducation of Children, Cambodia, 1975-1979, inspired by the childhood events of Sun Tzu-wen. Frightful to believe that men can tear the angels from hearts of children, disease the babes to searing eyes, slowly grow to bosom of stone, low, muffle their smiles, from sinless wild, gnarled the blossoms they twisted and gnarled to fertilize and fruit filled with bone. End poem. And there's several authors' notes here. Soyin Sen, recruited by the Khmer Rouge at the age of six while outside searching for frogs and rice paddy. The day of this recruitment would be the last day he would ever see his parents. Soon, along with other children recruits, rose quickly in rank, learning how to use weaponry such as the AK-47, the M-16 rifle, the 9mm handgun, as well as grenades. By age nine, he was given complete authority to kill anyone he believed a threat to the regime's existence. That's harsh.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose, like, children's soldiers is the definition of innocence ripped from the bosom, tearing the angels from hearts of children. And I think the author, Stephen, has depicted the emotional realities of children soldiers in this piece. And it's sad that this practice has continued beyond the Khmer Rouge and Hitler's youth, just as an example, to encompass ISIS and Boko Haram. The part that resonated the most with me was gnarled the blooms they twisted and snared to fertilize and fruit the field with bone. It's got such strong, visceral imagery, literally stomach-churning stuff. Very well done. And what did you think, Mika?
I still agree with you about to fertilize and fruit fields with bone. It's incredible to think that that by the age of nine, someone would be given not only the authority, but, you know, the implicit expectation to kill those who were a threat to the regime's existence. At the age of nine, you don't even know who you are, let alone, you know, the nuances that are involved with other people. And I think that I think that that must have been so effective in creating fear. Like, can you imagine someone with no perspective and no understanding, a child having that kind of power? It's just incredible. As far as I remember, the person in charge at that point was killing anyone who was intellectual, who was perceived as educated or intellectual, and how fitting then to put literal children in those positions of power. Some, you know, a group who's so moldable because they have no experience and no understanding. Just, I don't know. There's a lot that can be said about that. It's a beautiful piece.
Thanks, Mika. And Captain, what did you think? Are you on mute?
You betcha. Okay. Mute tube reading nothing. I thought this was a very visceral write. I remember growing up, this is something that occurred during my youth, my young person, I guess, young personhood. I'm going to make up a word. I remember hearing about these things on the news, and still you hear about child soldiers in Africa, them stealing children away from families, from homes, and recruiting them, and it just, I find it profoundly disturbing that these people are taking young children and they're robbing them of their childhood. They're just taking their minds and distorting them, and it's just, it's sad, it's disturbing, it's tragic. I was reading in the author's notes, it says thousands of child soldiers were recruited during this period. The regime's use of children whom they turned through re-education camps greatly aided in the extermination of the enemies and helped create sites known in Cambodia as killing fields, where countless were killed and buried in mass graves. And they're doing this in Africa too. I mean, if you've ever seen the film Blood Diamond, and you see, it seems like any place where there's a conflict, where it is not an organized or government organized army, you've got the insurgents recruiting children. And I think about these kids, and I think about what would I have, you know, at 9 years old, like, you're right, I didn't know who I was. And children are so accepting and so trusting. And when you take their young minds and pervert it this way, this is a thought that would keep me up at night. So I think this is a very profound write, and very thoughtful and very deeply disturbing.
Thank you, Captain. Great comment. And Nefesiana, would I be able to get you to read the last poem for today if I can get it to actually seed itself in the forum? Hang on one moment. That'd be right. We get to the last poem and then I get technical difficulties. Okay,
no,
so it's out by Captain Charles.
Of course.
It's loading slowly. Now my computer's freezing. Sorry, just a second.
Yeah,
I can do it.
The website.
Maybe. Oh, I got it. Okay.
Awesome.
Long in the Tooth by Patrick Childs. I've always lived my life on the razor's edge, leaping without looking from the highest ledge, diving in headlong to the depths of my despair, flirting with disaster and loving devil may care. Dancing with my demons through perdition's flames, addicted to the danger of playing people's games, feeling indestructible, the nature of one's youth. Time makes one so predictable, growing longer in the tooth. Those were different times. Wicked were our ways. Yet I wouldn't change a moment here at the end of days. We were reaching for new heights, sometimes finding the same old lows. We were seeking the ultimate rush. Why? Only the good Lord knows. It's an old and youthful story, going out in a blaze of glory. I've always lived my life on the razor's edge, leaping without looking from the highest ledge, diving in headlong to the depths of my despair, flirting with disaster and loving devil may care, dancing with my demons through perdition's flames, addicted to the danger of playing people's games, feeling indestructible, the nature of one's youth. Time makes one so predictable, growing longer in the tooth. Those were different times. Wicked were our ways. Yet I wouldn't change a moment here at the end of days. And Paul.
Great read.
Thank you, Faziana.
Great read.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? And, Captain, would you like to make the first comment? We've got 5 minutes, 4 minutes left.
Sure.
So keep it brief.
I will not get verbose. I will not ramble. Drugs and therapy are working. I really like this. The philosophy in this is just stunning. I like the repetition of the first stanza again toward the end. I've always lived my life on the razor's edge, leaping without looking from the highest ledge. This talks about the recklessness of youth, but how as we begin to live our lives, sometimes that recklessness just carries on into different stages of us. Those were different times. Wicked were our ways. Yet I wouldn't change a moment here at the end of days, which indicates to me that the author is saying that even though they made mistakes, that they wouldn't change a moment. And this is, to me, it speaks of a tremendous strength of character. This person has lived their life flirting with disaster, devil may care, dancing with my demons through perdition's flame, addicted to the danger of playing people games. And again, this speaks very loudly to the youth and the sense that they're bulletproof, and how it transitions to more of an intrinsic wisdom, seeking the ultimate rush. Why the good Lord only knows, it's old, youthful story, going out in a blaze of glory, and it talks about being long in the tooth. I really admire the way this is put together. I really enjoy this piece. I think there's a lot of intrinsic wisdom in it.
Thank you, Captain. And Faziana, you read it. What did you think?
I liked it. I agreed with the Captain that the repetition was awesome. I was really happy that part, the first stanza, repeated, because I really loved that stanza.
Thanks, Faziana. And finally, Mika, what did you think?
I liked it as well. I was thinking, talking about loving devil may care. It was one of the parts that really, it was repeated, and I feel like it was very good at bringing in the passion that comes with youth. There's all these extremes that are present in the poem. And no matter how much the consequences, we're in those extremes, the epic joys and the deep, deep, hollowing lows. You wouldn't change one thing at the end of the day. So, like, it's good to experience that sort of extreme pain and extreme joy.
Hell yeah. And with that, we've reached the end of the show. So I'd like to thank everyone. It was well said, wasn't it? So thank you, everyone, for calling in and being a part. And thank you to the poets. who have graciously provided their words for our show. And thank you, our captain, for the prompt. It was great.
Thank you. And the next one is going to be a little bit more fun. I'm going to pull out, because we have 1 April coming up, I'm going to do something on optical illusions, the drawings that you see. Where do you see the rabbit or do you see a goose? And I'm going to collect a bunch of those and put those out there for people to play with.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Thank you, Mika. Thank you, Afraziana, for calling in. And we'll call it a night.
Great show, Neutron.
Excellent show. Excellent prompt as well. Great job, guys.
Thanks, Mika.